Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am not Bob Enyard, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. My name is Brian Rohrbaugh. I'm setting in for Bob, who has lost his voice, and that makes it really hard to do radio when you don't have a voice. And I was going to ask Bob, he's actually here outside the studio, I was going to ask him if this has anything to do with what happened in the Bible when someone lost their voice. And now he's assuring me that he's not doubting God in any way. And now this isn't some way of raising money, is it, Bob? You're not going to a tower? No, he's not. So I think Bob is genuinely ill. And so without a voice, he's asked me to step in and do the show, and I hope you enjoy it. I got a phone call last Monday, and it was a writer from Vanity Fair. And of course, I asked myself the same question you're asking yourself. Why in the world would Vanity Fair be calling Brian Rohrbaugh? Well, they're doing a feature on Michael Moore, the film producer who did movies such as Bowling for Columbine and Fahrenheit 9/11. And they wanted my opinion. Before Bowling for Columbine came out, I was asked by, I believe it was the Associated Press, what I thought. And I told them that I had no idea what the movie was going to be like because I hadn't seen it, but it was hard to imagine anything redeeming coming from Michael Moore. And because of that comment, I'm guessing Vanity Fair wanted a little controversy for their feature story. And they asked me what I thought, and I have seen the movie Bowling for Columbine, and like all Michael Moore movies, it's dishonest, and it's intellectually dishonest. The premise of even the title, they put forth this idea that Klebold and Harris were bowling, and then after bowling, they went and murdered their friends and classmates, which of course isn't true. They didn't bowl that morning at all. But the premise of the movie, they use the name Columbine to generate sales, but it really isn't about Columbine. It's more about his agenda to remove guns from this country. But one of the interesting things in that movie is that throughout the movie, he's having this problem with Canada having more guns than the United States and having less gun crime. And I guess it never occurred to Michael Moore that the guns aren't doing the killing. They're not doing the crimes. It's the people behind the guns that are doing it. And, you know, the decline in our country morally and ethically has an awful lot to do with the amount of crime we have. But that was what that phone call was about, and I gave her my opinion, and it'll be interesting to see which part of that, if any, appears in the article. But I'm guessing that I will be the controversy and they will praise him. So that was an interesting surprise. And then last Wednesday, I met with a Japanese journalist who's doing a rather lengthy story about Columbine. And that was also interesting to see after this many years and all the things, you know, that have happened since with the World Trade Center and all, that Columbine is still a story of interest, especially when you get outside of the Colorado area. And I don't know if you heard yesterday's show with Joe Scott. I listened to that and thought that was a great show. Joe and Ken Scott are two of my heroes defending the innocent children who are being murdered through abortion. They take a lot of abuse and a lot of torment, and I thought the show was great, and I am very thankful that they're out there doing what they do. It's not easy, and that's what this country needs. The price they pay here ultimately ends up with rewards in heaven for them, and I'm grateful that they do what they do. They're an inspiration to me. Now, regarding that show and some of the topics on abortion, one of the things I wanted to talk about was orphanages versus foster care. Now, on the surface, they might not seem like they have a lot to do with abortion, but our foster care system is really broken. I think it's a bad idea right from the beginning. And one of the reasons I think it's bad is because good families do great foster care, but there's nothing in place to be sure there's good families. And these children are constantly moved in and out of one home to another. There's no stability. There's no safety. And there's really no accountability. And once you do child care like this as a source of income, it doesn't become as personal. You're almost impartial to the condition of the children. And I think that's a terrible way to deal with, you know, kids that don't have a home, especially kids waiting to be adopted. Now, my wife and I traveled to the Ukraine about a year and a half ago. And while there, we adopted two children. And we had prepared ourselves for almost a year for what we thought could be a really bad orphanage experience. We'd remembered the television shows that had been done on the terrible conditions in Romania, and we didn't know what to expect. So when we got there, we had traveled with a couple friends of ours, and we met with their adoption center in Kiev. And you look through books and look at pictures of children that you might be interested in meeting and adopting, and you have about an hour for that meeting. And we did that, and we found one of the kids that we wanted to look at, and I asked the director if we could see the book from that orphanage of the other kids. And they showed us that, and as we were looking through, we asked about one of the children, and they said, no, this child's not available for adoption. And so we kept looking, and ultimately we came up with two children that we wanted to visit, and we were going under the premise that as soon as we saw our children, we would know they were our children. And that's the experience of other people who have gone there. Now, in some countries, they pick the children for you, and that's fine. For us, we wanted to go and pick for ourselves. So that's why we traveled to the Ukraine. Well, after we were finished in the adoption center, I asked our translator, why was the one child in the book but not available for adoption? And she told us, because her mother still visits her. And I said, well, why is she there? And she said, well, if the family is not able to take care of their medical needs, then they can put them in the orphanage. And as long as they're visiting them, they will never be adopted and all their medical needs will be met. And then when their condition improves, then of course, they'll be taken out of the orphanage and given back to the family. And I thought, you know, that's kind of a nice way of taking care of it. When we think of, you know, former Soviet Union, I think most of us, at least I had a view that it was going to be a very cold culture and maybe not very warm towards children. And we were very pleasantly surprised with what we found there. And the value of children in that society, I dare say, is quite a bit more than it is in our society. But we traveled to the Ukraine. I'm sorry, we traveled to Zaporozhye, which was a city where we found our children, and we went to the orphanage. And when we got there, we had no idea what the front door was. It had a big gated area around it and multiple buildings. And we went in and walked through. And at one point, there was a lady in a hallway down on her hands and knees cleaning the baseboards. And, you know, no one knew we were coming. This was just normal business as usual at the orphanage. And we finally found our way to the director's office. And when we got there, they told us they'd find the doctor, because what they do is a doctor goes over the condition of the kids and then you meet the kids. And we got in there, and they said, well, the doctor's going to be tied up. Would you like to meet the little girl? And we said, sure. And they brought us into a small room and then brought her in. And immediately, without question, we knew this little girl was ours. And I remember my wife saying, she grabbed her and held her and said, I don't care what's wrong with her. She's mine. And I mention that because all of those children have some form of medical problems listed in these reports. And we had learned before going to the Ukraine that most of those medical problems don't really exist. So we were prepared for that. Well, we finally figured out when we went to court, they have a medical diagnosis because that way the court can waive the 30-day mandatory waiting period. And so instead of staying in the country for 30 days, they grant an immediate adoption and you can leave the country. So both the kids are very healthy. And so we met Rachel, and then shortly thereafter, we sat down and talked with the doctor, and they told us about the next little boy that we were going to meet. And by her description, we thought, well, you know, maybe he's going to be a little lethargic and all. Well, the ladies in the orphanage came in, and since there were four of us, they said, who's mom and dad? And we told them we were. And they brought out this little boy who was just bouncing and happy as could be and lively. And I've got to tell you, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. These were real tears of joy for us. We knew we had found both our children, and what a blessing it was. And our life has been just filled with that blessing and happiness from the moment we've seen them. And, you know, we couldn't leave Zaporozhye immediately. We had to wait for the court and the appropriate paperwork. So every day we got to visit the orphanage and see these kids and get to know them. And when it was finally time to leave, they never looked back. They knew that they belonged to us. We knew that we belonged to them. And it was one of those really special times in life. And you know, my words certainly don't express the joy and happiness that we've felt through all of this. So, you know, how does that relate to abortion? Well, both of our kids had a mother that loved them enough to give them a chance at life. And through that, they have changed our life. And those are very special people. I don't know all the conditions, don't know what was going on, but I know one thing. Abortion's legal there, and they didn't choose that choice. They chose life for these kids, and we will be eternally grateful. But having seen that orphanage and just how good it was, how clean it was, how well-maintained it was, for example, in this city, government buildings weren't really well upkept. You know, they've struggled economically in that part of the world for a while. And so those buildings weren't kept up real well, and some of them were run down. But when we got to the orphanage, everything was freshly painted. The place was clean. It was very well staffed. When we got there, I believe there was 109 kids in the orphanage, split into two sections, one for boys, one for girls. And in those two sections, everything was clean, well maintained. The whole system really favored the kids. They just, you could tell that community valued the kids. There were 50 caretakers for the children. That doesn't include the kitchen and the laundry staff. So, you know, you figure that they're probably working 8-hour shifts. So they have a great ratio of workers to each of the children. The only man working in this orphanage was an older gentleman who was a night watchman who made sure that the place was secure for the kids. Other than that, all the workers were women ranging in all ages, and they just loved these kids. At the time we picked up the kids, first, you know, we went to one section and then the other, but we took their pictures with the kids and with us. These ladies were crying very real tears when we picked up these kids. And those tears were a combination of both joy and sadness, because they knew these kids were going to a new home, which is what they wanted for them, but they were going to miss them. Now, when I think about, you know, our foster care system and how it works, you know, it doesn't offer the same protection. Now, good foster care parents are really a blessing, but the system just isn't geared to protect the children. you know, we see these tragic news stories of kids being molested or neglected, or in the case of the Florida child that just turned up missing. And, you know, these things happen. But if they were in a good orphanage, that probably wouldn't happen. You know, you have occasionally a person's going to leave and the kids may miss them and be sad, but they have great stability. They're not shuffled from home to home to home. And so this whole experience just really opened my eyes to something that our country could learn from. And of course, you know, good orphanages would also give another good alternative to women who are pregnant. And this idea in our country that it's convenient to kill babies, you know, just because then you can live your life, that's really a myth, because once you're pregnant, you're going to have a baby. Now, that baby may be dead, may be alive, but throughout your life, you're going to live with that. And the ability to have a good care system for the children and, you know, to have know that there's homes and people like us that want these children and will love these children and be grateful, that's really a very good answer instead of abortion, which is just no answer at all. It's one of the most wicked things that we could conceive of. And in fact, we go back to Nazi Germany and we look at the things that their doctors did that we're just appalled at. And we parallel that with what our so-called research doctors are doing with the bodies of these little babies. And we can see that we're not a country that's come all that far. In fact, we've gone backwards and we continue to slide. And I think it's important that the Christians in this country, you know, stand up and start asking for change and come forth with ideas. There's answers to almost all of the questions in our society found in the Bible. And so that was kind of our experience around this. And it was just a tremendous trip. I'm sitting here actually looking at photos from the trip and the condition of the buildings and the grounds for this orphanage. And it's just, you know, it brings back, of course, great memories, but I'm looking at the pictures of the other children here, and they're happy, and they're well cared for, and well dressed, and there's big playgrounds. It's just really a special place, and obviously a special place in my heart. Of those 50 caretakers, there 14 of them were doctors, and so doctors there may not have as much training as they do here, but they were really set up well to take care of the kids. And one of the doctors had a daughter, I believe she was 17, that had just gotten back from an exchange student trip from the United States. And she went to a school in Phoenix, Arizona. And I asked her about the school, and at first she was kind of hesitant to talk about it. But when I finally got her talking, she was laughing about how ridiculous our schools are compared to theirs. In the Ukraine, English is a required second language. So most of these kids are speaking English, while a lot of the adults don't speak English. You know, almost all the kids do. And she was talking about how easy the school was, that the stuff they were doing, she had done years earlier. And she told us about how their college works there. And if they get good grades in their schools, then they can go to college for free. And as they decline in grades, the expenses go up. And I thought, you know, that's a reasonable system. I'm not an advocate for government schools. In fact, our government schools are as good of example as you'll ever get of why no one should have government schools. But theirs are certainly a lot better than what we do. You know, we just keep lowering the standard and trying to raise more money. And every year, schools are a little bit worse. Unfortunately, I was part of that system, and my son died because of it. And we'd like to think that schools are safer after Columbine, but the reality is very little's changed. And, you know, I think that parents kind of have to make the decision. Are we going to keep our kids in the schools, and are we going to take our chances? And do we really know what's happening in the schools? And I dare say most parents don't. The schools don't want you to know. If, you know, back to our issue on abortion, I went to a little rally over at Columbine High School, I believe it was last year, and Survivors was there talking to the kids about abortion. And a couple of very interesting things happened during that time. And one of them was Ken Scott was attacked by someone. And, you know, the police came. And, of course, ultimately, they cited Ken, even though he did nothing. And I was there and I was recording what was happening around us. And I watched what happened. And, you know, Ken talked to the police. And then a day or two later, they called him in and told him to come down and talk to him. And they were going to give him a citation. So I went along with him. And this was in Jefferson County. And I told him I was a witness and that I also had a recording of what happened. And it was very clear by this recording who attacked who and what was going on. And so ultimately they decided after a bit of wrangling that maybe they didn't want to charge Ken and didn't want the controversy that went with it. But that those things happen when you go to that type of protest. Now, most people aren't going to have it happen, but Ken and Joe are they're real enemies, so they do tend to persecute them and try to haul them off or charge them in an attempt to get them to stop advocating for the lives of these children. But one of the people from the school came up to me, and actually Bob and I have talked about doing a show and playing the recording from this. But this lady came up to me and said, you know, after all the good work you've done, what are you doing here? And I said, well, the good work I've done, my goal in life is to protect innocent children from being killed. So what is it that you think is inconsistent with me being here? Well, she was angry at that, and we had a pretty interesting exchange through that, you know, 5 or 10 minutes that we talked. And she kept saying, it's not a baby, it's a fetus. And of course, it's a ridiculous argument. And we talked through the different things. She used really bad language and said, so you want these children to grow up to be beaten up. And I said, well, yes, I'd rather have these children alive, and if we'd stop this practice, we'd find that the abuse of children goes way down, and we can deal with that properly. But you don't justify killing a baby because you think there's a potential for them to be harmed later in life. You know, I'm very grateful that I had my son, Dan, and that we enjoyed the 15 years together that we had. I'd never trade that. So to me, it's ridiculous that anyone would argue it's better off to kill him as a baby just so that we can get through life without having to deal with a potential future problem. Well, the ultimate tragedy of the story with this lady was that she has a teenage son who's suicidal. Now, I learned that several months after this encounter, and how easy is this to figure that we would have, you know, someone who's advocating for the killing of innocent children have their own child saying, you know, why should I live anymore? And I hope that someone's intervened in her life and in her son's life so that he doesn't take his life, that both of them learn that human life is valuable and innocent human life is precious. We should never do anything to harm these children. And, of course, the Bible's full of warnings for the people that would harm the innocent. And, you know, that was just one more reason, I guess I would say, that, you know, these government schools are just so dangerous to the future of our country and our children. And one of the options, I'm going to do a quick commercial here for Maranatha Christian Center. This is an option for families. You know, it's not free, and yes, you'd have to make maybe some sacrifices to go here. They're in Arvada. They have over 100 staff members. They've got a beautiful 20-acre campus, Christ-centered, which should be the most the highest priority in our lives, the top academics, and for children ages 2.5 years to the 12th grade, a very worthy institution, something to consider. Their phone number is 303-431-5653. And, of course, there's, you know, homeschooling, and that's what Lisa and I are going to do with our kids. And, you know, you would say, well, that's obvious. You lost your son at Columbine. Of course, you wouldn't go back there. But we like the idea of homeschooling. We have a lot of friends that have homeschooled, and their kids are just wonderful to be around. And they interact so well with adults, and it's just a privilege to be around them. And by the way, those kids ask questions that really keep you on the top of your game. You have to think and really reason, because they're learning a lot. They're not messing around in a school dealing with issues of like sex education and when, what day of the week does the bus come that takes you to Planned Parenthood. You know, they're dealing with learning and all of the good things about education. Plus, they get to be with their family. They grow closer. They don't have the problem of, you know, at 14 years old, you can no longer talk to them. And so it's a really, really great way for the family to grow stronger and to benefit society. You know, in terms of test scores and all, it's pretty overwhelming that the homeschool is a huge benefit in terms of quality of education and the future for these kids. Some of the top schools recognize a large percentage of their population coming from homeschool, and is a big benefit to their institution. So that's what we're planning on doing, and those are two good options. Maranatha, great choice. Homeschooling is also a great choice. And so that's, you know, what we're going to do in our lives. And I just hope that I could encourage you, if you're in a position, to make that change in yours for the benefit of your kids. Don't wait till you learn what I've learned to realize the danger of the public school. I couldn't urge that enough. So, Bob, I wanted to thank you for letting me sit in here. It's a privilege to be here and talk to your audience today and discuss some of these things. And in the future, you know, maybe we should revisit that tape and some of the issues with that and show what's going on. And I'd like to encourage your audience to support this show. This is definitely listener-supported radio. There's several things here that you can purchase that helps the show. Also, just even a small donation is appreciated. For those of you who haven't read The Plot, I'd highly recommend it. It's great understanding of the Bible. And thanks, Bob, and we'll see you from Bob Enyart Live.